Deutschland jeder Bildung. Vom Schicksalviertel bis in die Sozialbausiedlung.
Vom Haus mit Pool in der besten Lage bis zum sozialen Brennpunkt.
Von der Kassiererin bis in die Chefetage, von München bis nach Flensburg.
Jeder checkt, das ist das erste Ding, wenn wir uns hier und jetzt in eure Herzen sehen. Die Leute stehen da drauf
und wir lieben es.
Wir gehört zu diesem Trend.
So, a very fast soundcheck. Everything works. Perfect. So, today... Oh, welcome to Talking Science. Welcome to Talking Science. The headset doesn't work. So, where we talk about science and sometimes talk about talking science, and depending on the amount of content I have, which can be represented by a negative exponential curve. Talking Science is a premium science program on campus radio, only available to those who listen in at 6 p.m. every Monday. Except for holidays, classes with special events requiring my attention, and when I need to recover from fateful weekends. And of course to those who have internet access and can download an MP3 file. Today we are going to talk about several topics that I will know within the next half an hour. The first one will be something of great importance because someone was wrong on the internet, and he still is. And of course that requires me to correct the incorrect information. The matter we're talking about is, I have to find that email I sent out. Yes. It's concerning the age of the Neanderthal fossil that was found in 2008 in the Denisovan cave. Well, we have talked that the Denisovan cave has been the source of one finger bone and two molars from which the DNA of a new human or humanoid, a human species was unsequenced. And there was also a thing. There was also a toe bone, from which a high coverage DNA sequence of a Neanderthal was recovered. The interesting thing was that both findings of the finger and of the toe of the Denisovan finger and the Neanderthal toe was from the same layer, the layer 11. The Denisovan was from the sublayer 11-2, which is slightly higher than the 11-4 from which the Neanderthal 2 bone was found. And the layer is has a... The layer has a... is one of the very few... So layer 11 contains upper Paleolithic assemblage or industries or findings or fossils and other things that are like stone tools. And that is about the period around 50,000 before our time. And on Wikipedia, on the Wikipedia page on Neanderthal, you will find in the introduction the last sentence, which says the genome. Oh, in addition, scientists reported for the first time the entire genome of a Neanderthal. The genome was extracted from the toe bone of a 1,300. Sorry, from 130, that is if you don't write out the numbers, you mispronounce them. From a 130,000-year-old Neanderthal found in a Siberian cave. The cave mentioned is the Denisovan cave in the Altai Mountains. And the reason why they, or why Wikipedia dated the bone to 130,000 years before present is due to they had two citations. One is the paper by Prüfer et al. Who sequenced the bone. And the other one is a popular scientific article by Carl Zimmer in New York Times. Carl Zimmer is quite a prolific science writer, or popular science writer. And I would expect him to, if not to be correct, then at least to found his numbers on some references, which apparently is not a part of a New York Times article. You wouldn't find any citations in his article. So he wrote in December 2013, the article titled Toll Fossil Provides Complete Neanderthal Genome, and the first sentence is, scientists have extracted the entire genome of a 130-year-old Neanderthal from a single toe bone in a Siberian cave, an accomplishment that far outstrips any previous work on Neanderthal genes. Except for the fact that he overdated the fossil, it is more likely overdated by 80,000 years. It is more likely to be 50,000 years old. An inaccuracy that, well, somehow obviously does not require me to correct, but I'm very happy to report that to my listeners so that they pay attention or at least acknowledge the fact that what is written on Wikipedia might not accurately represent the scientific consensus. And so later in the article by Carl Zimmer, he said, using improved methods, the scientists were able to reconstruct the genome from another trove of DNA from a 80,000-year-old finger bone retrieved by a team of Russian explorers from that said cave. And that is a reference, obviously, to the Denisovan finger toe, which is from the same layer as the Neanderthal fossil, and somehow they are separated by 50,000 years. I don't know. I mean, either my sources are wrong, or Cosima might try to write more consistently. So that was concerning the one thing that was wrong on the internet. One of the few things that is wrong on the internet. What else is to report? Well, have you heard of the theory? Oh, of course, that is a rhetorical question because you will not be able to answer me unless you have my phone number. In which case, I will ignore you while on air. The hollow earth theory, it's a theory that says that the earth is hollow, and obviously that is something that you often find in myth and legends. People believing in hell often locate that place somewhere inside the earth. But apart from works of fiction, there are also some scientific proposals. For example, 300 years ago, so in the 17th century, that was at the start of the modern scientific era, which you could say started with Newton's. Well, you could argue the modern scientific era started with Galileo. But that's another discussion. What is important is that we know that Newton's Principia Mathematica defined modern mechanics or physics. And Edmund Halley, who was a contemporary of Newton and who actually he he financed the publication of Principia Mathematica. He derived one of the theories he derived, or one of the predictions he made from Newton's Opus Magnum, was that the Earth is hollow. Halley was an astronomer, and he's most famous for the Halley's, or people probably know him mostly because of the Halley's Comet, which is visible from Earth every 75 years. And this comet has been observed for over 2,000 years. And so every once in a century, people, and I think the last time we saw it was 2006, but well, so every 75 years you might find the comet in the news, because it's also quite bright, I think. I'm not an astronomer. Anyway, in the 17th century, when science didn't really establish itself, while it was still kind of a, you know, kind of appendix to philosophy or to natural philosophy, while it was still under the dominion of religion, there were different theories concerning Earth. I think it was already established that Earth was rotating around the sun. But people didn't know, and we probably still don't know, the composition of the inner Earth or how the inside of the Earth works. And hollow Earth, the belief that the Earth is hollow, was rather plausible proposition, a theory that, you know, bridged the different gaps in empirical observation, like earthquakes, for example, and also the theoretical or the theological understanding of the nature. But of course, Halley, he was aware how outlandish his theory was, which is the reason why, when he published it, he wrote, it would be nice if I find it again. So there's a quote from the paper he published, and the funny thing is, nowadays you wouldn't find any paper concerning the hollow Earth theory published in any notable journal. But then Halley, he had a very high standing in the scientific establishment. He was a member of the Royal Society, and I think he published his theory in the proceedings of the Royal Society, and he probably could have written anything he wanted and in any journal he wanted, although there wasn't that many journals then. So he wrote, yes. So he knew his insight was very radical. So he wrote, if I shall seem to advance anything that looks like extravagant or romantic, the reader is desired to suspend his censure, which in cinema we call that the suspension of disbelief, or censure in that sentence means the judgment, the suspension of judgment. So the reader is desired to suspend his judgment till he have considered the force and number of the many arguments which concur to make good so new and so bold a supposition. Which he's saying, I might sound crazy, but please don't disbelieve me until you have heard all the good arguments I have for my theory, and then you might be convinced. But before that, just shut off the rational part of your brain. So he then proceeds to outline some of the arguments. For example, one of the problems they had was the temporal changes in Earth's magnetic field. and other and they didn't have a very good explanation for that. So one theory Halley had was that the Earth has a mantle, and inside there are spheres. There's another core, and between the mantle and the core there's a fluid, and that is probably what our current that is actually quite if we just left it to that, we might say that Halley that he actually advanced our current understanding of the Earth 300 or 200 years before before it was established, before it was seen as an established theory, because that's what we currently believe, that we have an iron core, a fluid iron core, and that that is the part which causes the magnetic field, and its fluctuation causes the changes of the magnetic field, which is not properly aligned with the geographical north and south pole. But Halley goes on to say that there are different spheres, so every sphere is separated with by an atmosphere, by some fluid from the layer below, and then that layer again is separated by an atmosphere from the layer below them. So it's kind of a layered cake, well, a spherical layered cake in Halley's theory, which is quite fascinating. I remember there is a tribe in the Amazon, the Pirajas, who are famous, who are noted in the scientific world, or in the with among the linguists, or because of the language. Apparently the Pirajas their language falsifies Noam Chomsky's theory of universal grammar, the fundamental part of which apparently is recursion. Recursion is a very basic trait of all languages. For example, if we say, I live in a greenhouse, then we have a recursion, or we have a nesting in that we live in a house, and the description, the attribute of the house, the green, is nested within the sentence. Or if you say, I like the fact that I'm sitting in a room where I speak into a microphone to people who don't know me. Then I have these different subclauses, each nested into a higher ordered clause. And this kind of nesting, according to Chomsky, is apparently universal to all languages, all human languages. And the Pirajas, sorry, I have to Google, the Pirajas. The Piraja language apparently does not know any kind of recursion. So if they want to say something like, I live in a green hut, they would say, I live in a hut, the hut is green, or something like that. So that all the structures are parallel and not nested. And that's quite, apparently there's a kind of a minor dispute within the linguist community concerning this finding. There are kind of some hardcore pro Chomskyans, and there are those, the guy who actually lived with those Pirajan people for decades, Dan Everett, who proposes this falsification, that he to some degree has been has become a outcast within the main linguist community, which is apparently still dominated by Chomskyan philosophy. So this Pirajas, yes, Dan Everett, he started out as a missionary to those people, and that's the reason why he studied their language so that he can preach to them. He tried to convert them to Christianity, and apparently that's one of the reasons why many Christian university or colleges in the United States, they have very strong linguistic departments. So he went out there trying to convert those heathens to Jesus, and after 20 years he became an atheist himself. Apparently because it was impossible to convey them the meaning of the message, of the Christian message, in a way that they could, that those people would take it seriously. Apparently they just laughed at them because he was funny. He wrote a book, it's called Dan Everett. Especially if you are interested in anthropology or in other cultures, or if you're interested in sociology, in the study of cultures, if you want to question how universal some behavior are and see how different other people might behave, you might want to read a kind of a memoir he wrote about his life in the Amazonian jungle among the piranhas. It's called Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes. It's quite fun to read because it's a very different take on life. You might find that interesting. Anyway, so the piranhas, they also have their own cosmology, and in that they believe that the world is layered, in that it's kind of a layered cake, and apparently the reason why people, and in every layer, in the layers above, there live people just like us, so there's a world just like us, and also in the layers below. And the reason why people get sick or ill in their theory is that because something from the layer above fell down, for example, a leaf. And if you step onto that leaf, you become ill, apparently. So, yeah, for whatever reason. And apparently this kind of layering never stops. Although their theory is obviously linear, and the theory by Haley is spheric. So Haley was probably the first and the first one who took this idea to a scientific level, who actually tried to explain this hollow earth theory in a scientific manner. And he also believed that it was possible that those atmosphere or those fluid between the different spheres, different layers are breathable or could maintain life. Anyway, so, and then, of course, you have all this crackpots and different theories concerning how a hollow earth might work, or apparently there's a sequel to the Iron Sky film. It's a satire. If you know, if you don't, well, don't know it. It's not that funny. Anyway, apparently there's still, I mean, if you Google Hollow Earth, you might find conspiracy theories where people still believe that. So 300 years later, after Haley, there's another mathematician, in this case a scientist, who advanced some kind of a scientific theory of how Hollow Earth works. And his theory is... He doesn't even propose that that or Earth is hollow, and that there is some kind of a subterranean world in which, I don't know, lizard men live. But He simply states that it is possible to assume, or that it is mathematically valid to say, that we actually currently live in a hollow earth, that actually our earth is concave, in that that the part below us, that what we call soil, is actually on the outside of the sphere, and that the universe is actually in the inside of the sphere, so that we currently live in that in a sphere. And if we look into the sky, we actually look into the center of the sphere. And that makes, and you might say that that sounds crazy, but it is obviously mathematically possible to do so. You just simply invert the coordinate system. So it is a simple mathematical mapping in which you map every point from inside to the outside. Imagine you have you have an axis. For example, you have the real axis of the real numbers, and you simply map the negative numbers to the positive numbers, or you map all the numbers outside of the domain of between 0 and 1 to the numbers inside that domain. And that is mathematically or geometrically possible. Or you can simply invert the coordinate system. For example, instead of saying, imagine you have a spherical coordinate system. Imagine you describe every position or every point in the universe by a coordinate system whose origin is the center of the Earth, and you describe it by the length, by the distance between the origin and the point you want to describe, and by two angles, one describing the one that is in the horizontal and another angle that is in the vertical. So using such a spherical system, you could describe any point in the universe. And imagine, instead of using the distance, the r, to describe the point, you use the inverse, so 1 over r, in which case any distance that is the farther away a distance is, the closer it is, or the smaller the distance is, or the number is in that system. I mean, that is a kind of inversion of the coordinate system. But in a more general way, you can also simply map the inside of a geometric body to its outside, and that's what this Egyptian mathematician Abdel Kahr did. And the funny thing about a theory like that is it is not falsifiable, it is not refutable. It is in some degree like seeing that the Earth is the center of the universe, and there's no way to disprove it, because we could obviously the more mathematically elegant way to describe the universe, or at least the our solar system, is to assume that the sun is at the center of our solar system, and that every celestial body rotates or orbits around it in a circular or elliptic manner. But in which case the math becomes very, it becomes more elegant, it becomes more easy to describe. But on the other hand, you could also try to put the Earth into the center. I mean, having any coordinate system that assumes the Earth is in the center, you could then argue that all the bodies rotate or orbit, or they move around Earth, but not in a very mathematically elegantly describable manner, but in very complicated lanes that actually the astronomers before Galileo and before Copernicus, they struggle to describe this kind of systems because in the geocentric worldview, you had apparently those orbits along which then you have orbits on that orbit, I forgot the name they use for that, on which those bodies moved.